This is the Cyber Union Talk Show, Episode 1. Welcome to the Cyber Union Talk Show. We're building an open source labor movement. My name is Steven, and with me is Walton.
Hi, my name is Walton.
We're here putting together a podcast that's going to be discussing open source technologies and the labor movement. The idea is that there's a lot that the labor movement isn't doing that we see existing in the open source communities, and we feel that it would be helpful that the both communities working together. One of the big questions that we come across is, what is, you know, free and open source software? Walton, why don't you give a little bit of an idea of where we're going with this?
So our podcast is an exploration. We see ourselves as beta testers for the trade union movement. We think that free and open source software and the trade union movement have a lot to offer each other, but there isn't very much communication between the two sides. So this show is a first tentative step in the water to try and find out what the communities have in common and what they can offer each other.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way of putting it. And we're going to run into things because we're both very, you know, pragmatic Linux users and open source users. We run into glitches on occasion, but we see where these things can help us. We learn it, and we have hard times with it too. In fact, right as we were trying to record this show, we both ran into audio issues with trying to record this. And we're utilizing some tools that are not entirely open source, such as what we're using right now to communicate is Skype. I'm in the Boston area, and Walton is in Glasgow, Scotland. But I think the connection of through technology kind of further emphasizes where we're going with the ideas that we want to test out. And there's also some ideas that we both have coming from the labor movement itself. I've been active in the labor movement myself for about 6 years. And there are a lot of new things I've seen within technology that I always felt the labor movement should be at the forefront on, and they've always been trailing behind. Walton, have you felt similarly in your experience?
Yes, I have. I live in Glasgow, Scotland, as you said. Really perceptive listeners might notice that my accent isn't classic west of Scotland. I am South African. I've been involved in the labor movement for probably about 15 years. Initially in South Africa, I'm from Cape Town, and I worked with the big South African trade union federation, KUSATU, as well as some of the other smaller unions. I've been living in Scotland for 6 years, and in Scotland I work for a trade union called Unite, which is the biggest union in the UK and Ireland. It's a big general union. And it's just been really, really clear to me that unions around the world are needed now more than ever, but they are in a bit of trouble. Many of them are stuck in a bit of an organizing impasse where they are seeing their core constituencies get smaller, often in the manufacturing and public sectors, and they are struggling to reach out to new groups of workers in the service sector and also younger people, women, migrant workers, and people that we really need to build the next generation of trade union activists. And we think that there are lots of really interesting free tools available in the free and open source software community, and we've been testing them. And what we're doing right now is a test. We are two trade union activists from different continents who are communicating with each other, and we're sharing ideas, and we're hoping that by doing this we can build an open source labor movement. And what we're doing by hosting this show is opening this conversation up, and we're inviting you as our listeners to get in touch with us and share some of your ideas and some of the experiences that you have, also some of the technologies that you're using. Neither of us is any kind of technological wizard. For myself, I'm self-taught. Someone gave me a Linux CD 5 years ago, and I taught myself how to use Linux because I was fed up with Microsoft for both practical and ideological reasons. And it's been sometimes a difficult journey because open source software requires you to think. It doesn't think for you, and that's a wonderful thing. It's liberating. It puts you in control of your information, which I think is important for so many reasons. But if you're a lazy computer user, it can be frustrating. And sometimes you want to go back to the safe world of having your hand held by Steve Jobs and Bill Gates.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point. Just to give a bit of a background on where I'm coming from, my first computer that I ever played with was DOS back in the 80s. And I obviously grew into using Windows, but it always frustrated me because I always kind of felt I was being told how to work a computer and not letting me do what I wanted with a computer. From the licensing that the Microsoft imposed to, you know, their keys that they had, to CD keys that you need to input to get a program that you purchased installed, which made things very complicated when I was younger. And I always felt this frustration. I wanted to get away from Microsoft, but I never saw a viable opportunity to do so. And I never felt confident enough to jump into, at that time, Unix was something my father was using, but I didn't understand it, and it scared me. But when Linux started developing and I started seeing the X window and development within the community, I started seeing something that was really amazing, actually, I think. It was the community leading things and not being told from somebody higher up. And I feel the similarity with the labor movement is very, at least in the United States, very real. The labor movement in the U.S. has a long history of, let's say, for 50 to 60 years of kind of being very top-down oriented, with certain exceptions of labor unions being very horizontal and democratic. I started, you know, that's how I ended up getting connected from technology into sort of to the labor movement and the power of the internet in ways. Myself, I use social networking sites as well, not so much as Twitter, although we do communicate via Twitter, Walton and I, but also via Identica or identi.ca, which is one tool that we're going to be talking about in the show too. But the technology of open source, I think, was really beautiful in a lot of ways because it just showed people willing to come together outside of their work to build something, which kind of leads into something that I think we will eventually talk about, is building a different type of economy through open source and contributing to it instead of always contributing to proprietary software that leads to profits to a company that may not be respecting their workers' rights.
For me, what inspires me most about the open source software is that what you have is a finished product that is highly sophisticated. It can rival anything that's produced by Apple or Microsoft, and yet it's produced with very little expense and not much hierarchical organization. There are different open source projects and there are different products available, but the system that both of us are using is a distribution of Linux called Debian, and it's democratically run, which for us is unbelievable. This is an international engineering project which thousands of people contribute to, generally don't get paid anything for it, and they've managed to construct a computer operating system and a whole repository of software that can do absolutely everything, including record a podcast, and they've all volunteered to do it. It's a gift economy. It's from each according to their ability to each according to their need, and that flies in the face of everything that right-wing ideologues tell us about human motivation. They tell us that people will only be motivated by self-interest, and that you need to, you know, there needs to be a dog-eat-dog world in order for all of us to thrive. And I think open source software for both of us is a practical example of people cooperating and working together, because we are able to build something together that is for the common good.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a good segue into talking about some of the different tools that we want to bring to the forefront and let people know about, for them to utilize, try to work into their structures that they have, whether you're in the US, UK, or anywhere in the world, including a lot of developing nations where the labor rights may not be as easy. I mean, not that they're easier to exchange in the United States, because there's a huge push against the labor movement here, as we are very small in percentage of the workforce, but still strong as a movement. At least we hope. So kind of going to the different tools that we're going to try to bring out and feel that are could play a very good role with a lot of unions. I kind of want to talk a little bit. I know we've discussed, Walton, the different tools that we want to bring out. The one that that you had talked about was Frontline SMS. Can you give a little bit of an idea of what the idea and where this came from, your understanding or research into it?
Okay. Frontline SMS is very interesting for me, and I came across it when I was researching social networks and how trade union activists were using social networks, common platforms like Facebook and Twitter, to organize in developed countries, in countries where lots and lots of activists have smartphones and they have internet access and they can access these tools. And for me, it was really interesting how easy it was to communicate using these tools. And I began to wonder, what can you do in countries which don't have the same technological infrastructure, where there are less ambient resources, fewer people have smartphones? Is there a way to communicate? And I did a bit of research and eventually came across a book called SMS Uprising. And it was about the use of text messaging in developing countries by development organizations and political campaigners to spread messages. And in particular, a piece of open source software called Frontline SMS. You can download that free from their website. It's frontlinesms.com. And all it is text message gateway software. And if you download it onto your computer and open it up, you'll get a program that looks a little bit like an email program, like Thunderbird or Microsoft Outlook or something like that, except that instead of storing email addresses, it stores mobile phone numbers. And you can send messages to mobile phones through the software, and you can receive them back again. What's particularly interesting about it is that you don't need to be connected to the internet in order to send those messages. You plug an ordinary mobile phone, old Nokia phones work best, into the software, and you buy yourself a SIM card and some airtime. You buy an SMS bundle, and you can send messages to people all over the place. And if you spend any time in developing countries, you'll realize that old Nokia phones are ubiquitous. Everyone uses them. They're inexpensive. People like them because they're tough. Fishermen off the coast of Africa like Nokia phones because you can drop them in the sea, take them out, dry them in the sun, and they still work. People keep the phones for years, and it's become a really important communication mechanism in Africa in particular. What's particularly interesting is how Africa seems to have leapfrogged a stage of development. There was no or very little fixed line telephony in many parts of Africa, but massive investment in mobile phone technology has meant there's quite a good infrastructure. There's cell phone masts in many parts of the continent, and using something like Frontline SMS, for next to no money, you can communicate with people all over the continent. And it's been used to great effect by projects, people monitoring election results. They have people at election, at polling booths around the country with a mobile phone, and they send in text messages of how many people are turning up, have they seen any voter intimidation, what are the likely outcomes of that election. And that information is then coordinated by the person with a laptop, who's then able to create a mashup and provide quite an accurate picture of what's happening over a wide geographical area. It's used for primary health care. People, doctors and nurses out in the field, can send messages back to a hospital about drugs and medication that they need, or particular issues that they're coming across. And there are a few instances where I've come across people using it to organize farm workers in South Africa, people who are quite geographically far away from their union head office and from union officials that they need to be in contact with, and they don't have fixed line telephones or internet or anything like that. But an SMS service makes it quite easy to send messages, to get people's views. You can conduct an informal ballot. You can text all your members and say, what do we think of the wage offer? Do we take it or not? And give them a few hours to respond by text message. And when the message comes back, you can take an informed decision based on that. So both Frontline SMS and a similar tool which provides information mashups based on text messages called Ushahidi, for me, are really exciting, and I'd like to see trade unions experiment a lot more with them to communicate with their members.
Yeah, that sounds great. And the cool thing I think about the software is that the amount of different languages that it supports, obviously, because it is open source, there's a lot that people can do and contribute to the community as well. I'm looking through their website right now, which is frontlinesms.com, for those that are interested in going where we're going. I'll leave a link in the show notes. But I think what you're talking about is really interesting, because you can create these groups within SMS features specifically, and it it seems that there can be more of a discussion too. It's not just, I mean, for people who are utilizing it, they can message back, and it seems like there could be a development of some kind of community through it, just using your phone. And I think that's great. And I think it's, you know, you're talking about in a lot of the developing countries that it could be utilized, but it's also a tool that can be utilized in well-developed nations as well, which I mostly because, I mean, SMS is still a pretty common used tool. And it's also clear that in the recent uprisings that we've seen in the Middle East, that it has been a very strong tool using their phones and connecting to people. So it's clear that there's this ability to connect. It's a matter that there are a lot of different unions and organizations out there that can make use of these tools from their local offices and trying to get their members to be deeply connected, I think is pretty cool. Have you tried downloading the software yourself?
Yes, I have. I've downloaded it. It runs on Mac, Windows, or Linux. I managed to install it. It wasn't particularly difficult to install. It's, to be honest, not incredibly easy to start using if you've never used it before, because it's an entirely new system, and you do need to read the documentation if you want to figure out how to use it. But it wasn't, mostly it was pretty plug and play. It was plug in the phone. It recognizes the phone as the communication gateway, and then you can start collecting your numbers and communicating. I haven't experimented as much as I'd like to, largely because I'm not leading a great SMS campaign, and I don't want to bug 10,000 people with text messages just to see if it works. But there are people deeply involved in the community who I've been in contact with, and they're pretty willing to help. And I'm sure we could also get hold of them if there's real interest in the show for people wanting to know more about frontline SMS.
Great. And I think that's a good shout out to our listeners that, you know, we're very open to hearing your thoughts on where the show is going, and any software that you feel that we should be talking about and looking into. Anyhow, so going on, the next thing I kind of want to talk about a little bit is social networking, which kind of connects how we got connected in part, which was actually through, if I recall correctly, I don't remember exactly when, was StatusNet or Identica. StatusNet is the founding organization that developed Identica, which is a similar social network to Twitter, which a lot of people, I'm sure, are familiar with. The difference is that a lot of people see with Twitter is a very, though they do base some of their stuff open source in their initial developments and everything, they're also have some elements and issues actually concerning privacy, which is one of the reasons that I try not to utilize it as much, because I rather have control over the information I send out there. StatusNet, when I first joined, it was in 2008, I think, or 2009, is a website feeds where you can have similar character limitations on sending messages. The difference is, I feel, with Twitter and StatusNet is that on, like, Identica, you can actually have conversations. And what I mean by that is, I know people can respond and do at mentions with Twitter, but to follow the whole conversation is a matter of clicking back, you know, seeing reply to this, reply to that, reply to this, reply to that. Whereas on Identica, you can actually click on the conversation itself. It's a separate link, and you can see everybody's response, not just the two people that are having the conversation, but other people that chime in and discuss as well, which I thought was really, really cool. It kind of built a stronger connection amongst the people that I actually follow and subscribe to, and those that who subscribe to me on the Identica. The cool thing, I think, is that it has a connection to Twitter. So both you and I have user accounts on Identica, but also on Twitter. And when I post on Identica, it'll post it to Twitter. But if I post it to responding to people on Identica, that can be held back, so people don't get misinformation and don't follow a correct link. But the other cool thing, feature is, which I find is groups. And we've actually created a group for the show called Cyber Unions. And we also have a user called Cyber Union. So if you do want to subscribe to when the show will be posted, please do so. But, I think the nicer aspect of it is that there is a stronger community that tries to get rid of spammers. So that is kept to a limitation of people that are just going in there trying to sell things. And it really has a deeper emphasis on discussion rather than broadcasting. What was your experience been with Identica yourself, Walton, if you don't mind me asking?
I think I went on to Identica purely because I knew it was the open source alternative to Twitter. And I was particularly interested in technology that was beneficial to trade unions. And on a purely practical level, I haven't found Identica that useful for trade union discussion. And the only reason for that is there's not that many of us on there.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while for technology to filter out into the general public and for people to start using it, for trade union activists to take it up. And there are quite a few union people on Twitter. So I use Twitter quite a lot to interact with them. Identica has a very, very strong open source community, and it's really, really excellent for people who are interested in open source software. There aren't that many trade unionists on it there. But I think we've seen the dangers of trusting people with your information. Recently, we saw the Facebook purge, where Facebook took down a whole number of political groups. We have had allegations of Twitter removing trending topics that were inconvenient. We don't know if it's true or not, but there is some suspicion. People have some suspicion that Twitter isn't quite the free medium they thought it was. And so I think a lot of activists are realizing that it's important to have a backup plan, because if your communication mechanism relies on a commercial service, if they decide to remove it, then you could be in trouble. So I think the way Stephen does it and the way I've begun to do it is ideal. We use Identica, but it forwards the messages onto Twitter, so you get the benefits of the wider audience that exists in Twitter. But you still keep control of your information, and you're able to keep some of the possible negative elements of Twitter at arm's length to an extent.
And I think I was going to say that's a great point too. And one of the other benefits, if you don't mind, sorry to jump in there, that Statusnet has or Identica has that Twitter doesn't, is they allow the code that they put together to create their software and web services open to anybody, which means actually that anybody can download it, put it on their own server, and run a Identica or Statusnet server that connects with Identica, the website itself. And one of the advantages of this is that, like, say, such and such union or like Unite, where you are, decided to do that, they could create and maintain control over that information, and they could go private. So they could have just their members talking to each other. That's not broadcasted to the internet public, so to speak. Sites, similar sites like I on Identica, I actually have one account there, but I also have an account on another site called Brainbird.net, which runs Statusnet software, but connects back to the Identica community. And there are other websites like Mozilla has their own Statusnet server site as well. And the real beauty of it is exactly what you're talking about, Walton, is that Twitter and Facebook have allegations of being taking down organizations that they don't agree with, but in this case that couldn't actually happen with Statusnet. Nobody would actually be able to say, oh, let's take down Identica. Well, you could take that down, but you're going to still have Brainbird, you're going to still have Mozilla, and they're still going to communicate to each other and interconnect, which I think is one of the great benefits of it, is that each union can have their own, and you can't shut down a large movement that is federated like that, but connected. And I think that's the real beauty I see behind Identica. And Evan, who is one of the lead developers or the lead developer or runner of Identica in Canada, has spoken about that. And one example he used is, back when, in Egypt in February were uprising, the government shut down Twitter. And people had a harder time communicating because they were relying on that just one service and that one server. Where if Statusnet, and as Statusnet grows, if there were many of them, it would be nearly impossible for any government or corporation to shut it down. It's just, which is, I think, the greatest part about it.
And if I can come in on that conversation just to say that this isn't by accident. It's not that it's just by accident that this open source software is able to remain free of corporate control or whatever it is. It's part of the ethics of open source. Open source tends to be, it's an ethical movement. People are involved in it because they believe that information is free. And a lot of these ethics have been codified in things like the general public license, which is a lot of trade unionists might know as the copyleft idea. But crucially, for example, the operating system that we're running, Debian, has something called a social contract. And that's basically the agreement that Debian makes between themselves as an organization and the rest of the world. And number 5 on the social contract is no discrimination against persons or groups, and no discrimination against fields of endeavor. So that means Debian's not going to say, we don't believe in trade unions, so therefore you can't use our software for trade unionism. They create software, and how you use the software, you have a right to use that software any way you like. So it's deeply embedded in the ethics of open source software that people should have the freedom to control their own information and decide what they want to do with it.
Yeah, and I think that's that leads into a lot of further discussions I think we're going to have about the community and the way the, like Debian, as your example is saying, develops this commitment to the really to the public good. And I think one of the elements that I hope to see with that's within the open source communities, much like within Debian and also Statusnet, is, you know, since the source code is available and people can add to it, they're obligated to give back what improvements they make on that software. So there's a much stronger connection between them. And there's not so much competition. It's really cooperating. And I think that's a really key thing that labor unions should be working with, and looking at how they too as organizations can cooperate with other elements, that are kind of building a different economic idea and political economic structure. Because the idea of just contributing for the benefit of the good is not widely practiced, but within the open source community, it's kind of a constant. It's always there. You can always see what's going on. It's very transparent. You can jump in on the discussions. It's not structured in the same democratic ways as people think and bureaucratic. It's very well established and very well efficient, on solving problems and bringing people together. I know there are a number of different tools that I utilize, which I won't go into, but I have almost immediate access to the people that are working on it. And, you know, they push you to communities of reporting a bug, which sounds scary because, like, if you're not savvy into computers, you'd think that reporting a bug is a challenging thing and that you need to know all. But the communities are very receptive to people who are coming from different levels. And that's a constant discussion, too, of, you know, working with people who have different technology levels and understanding of where things are. And I think maybe what Walton and I both see here is that community is something to embrace, and that since labor movements had been informally and theoretically trying to create the same ideas, there's a large connection between open source and the labor movement that we hope to bridge and connect.
Yeah, Stephen, I see the open source software movement as being a social movement, and it's a social movement to take people's information back from corporate control and to defend the freedom of the internet and to defend the freedom of the information architecture that exists around us, and to have a transparent and accountable mechanism for controlling this really important resource. We're in the information age. Who controls information is absolutely crucial to a lot of political and economic decisions. And the open source software movement, for me, it's a social movement that is active both practically and politically. Practically by building tools that people can use so that they don't have to use corporate software, and also politically by developing ideas and theory and ethics and social contracts around this. And it kind of reminds me of the old idea, which is common in many parts of the left, particularly in the cooperative movement and the mutual movement, of the need to build the new world in the shell of the old. So we don't wait until the old world collapses and then try and build from the start, but you start creating positive alternatives now, and you encourage people to engage in the positive alternative so that they don't need to be tied into that corporate world anymore. And for me, that's what the open source software movement is doing. It's providing tools which are really effective, even if you care nothing or know nothing about the politics and ideology behind them. They're very good tools. They are embraced not just by leftists or trade unionists or political activists, but there are plenty of capitalist businesses that use open source software simply because they're really, really good tools. Half of the internet runs on open source servers. But they provide a real alternative, and very inspiring to both of us for that reason.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I'm just always amazed with and impressed with how the open source community works and continues to grow in the face of large corporations like Microsoft, large corporations like Apple, and they keep building their tools, and it's not that they shut them out either. They still build their tools utilizing those platforms as well, as much as they may not be that welcome by Microsoft or Apple in those cases. But there's a strong push to try to limit the abilities of open source, and we hope that they don't limit them, because I think the more you constrain it, much like the labor movement, the stronger the fight becomes for survival. And I think that's where the labor movement is now, is that we're at a point where we're at a moment of trying to build strength to further survive for the next day and become stronger, both domestically in each country, but of course globally, as we see the labor unions connecting across borders, which I think is a great strength that has not been embraced. But I think between the labor movement, as it learns to adapt to new things, and as the tools that we try to bring forward through the open source communities, I hope to connect both of them. I feel that we've covered a lot today, Walton. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that's enough for today. So here's to building an open source labor movement.
Yes. So we will try to record the show every week, and we'll be posting it on our website, which is cyberunions.org. And the information that we talk about on the show will be available in the show notes, and look forward to hearing back from you. Solidarity with the unions of the world.
Solidarity and goodbye.
Bye-bye. Walton and I would like to thank Bryn, who provided the Creative Commons introductory music to the show, from his latest song, It's Not Working. Please enjoy.
Smiling downtown, leading me on just for fun. It's not working, I don't thought that you would be mine. Working, it's not working.